Welcome to Reality TV, the podcast where we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. I'm Jody, and I'll be your inner voice as I break down all the shows we watched together this week. No shame, no regret, just wanting all the reality we can get. Remember to check the show notes for how to find me and the rest of our chosen people. Facebook and Instagram, Welcome to Reality TV, and Twitter at Reality TV Pod. And for bonus episodes, head on over to patreon.com/welcometorealityTV. And now, on with the show. Hey, welcome back to a marvelous Monday and a 90 Day Fiancé recap. But before we get into it, did you see those previews for next week? Oh my God. All I want for Christmas is this show to return as a form of the Truman Show, and we just get everything and anything 24/7. I may end up even liking Claremont Apples. Anything is possible at this point. Also, I just started a YouTube channel. I will provide the link in the show notes because I'm too new to get a personalized URL, probably just because I look so young. But I'm going to be putting up some funny shit on there that's just too hard to do on a podcast, like the story of my 70-plus-year-old parents who accidentally stole a car last week. True story. This shit only happens to me. So subscribe, and I'll be adding lots of stuff as we go. All right, so let's get into it. Molly and Luis. We start with a mammogram text dream case study, a close-up shot of Molly's 10-pound twin girls. I can only imagine the underboob sweat that happens on a hot day in Georgia with those. Ladies, you know what I'm talking about. But no worries, because according to Molly's shirt, no bust too big. Tell that to Dog the Bounty Hunter's wife. She said the same thing until she had a reduction, and those things grew back just to spite her for dressing them in American Gladiator tees and Lycra sports bras. I'll say it again, this is not an ad, but Moving Comfort sports bras. Go get you one. Well, it's 15 days out until the wedding, and Molly is feeling gypped. The way she says it in that southern accent just makes me want to repeat it all day long. Gypped. Certainly, I'm sure that's the opposite reaction that you all have to me when I speak in the worst regional accent there is, Chicago. Close second, however, is the UP of Michigan, eh? Well, Molly is pissed and feeling gypped because Luis got to go get jerked off by some strippers, allegedly, and she just had to come home by 10 p.m. and dirty up her white carpet by moping around in flip-flops. Hey, Molls, maybe you wouldn't need a man to stay home and clean if you took your grimy shoes off by the door. Just me? She goes to wake up Luis, who has been probably sleeping for close to 15 hours, and she's asking if he got any private dances. And he says, nah, just drinking, baby. Then to his camera crew buddies, who probably also had some fun with him at the club, he says, oh, I throw money. Last night was, oh my God, amazing. But knowing how easily he can pacify Molly, he says, baby, I needed that because in this home, as kids, you see, Luis needs more days off because he just don't want to stay home and take care of the kids. And she talk, bothering me. Welcome to marriage, Luis. Wait until you see how fun it is cleaning out the garage and preparing for taxes. The only thing that made me second guess that he had a little handy in the boom boom room was the stack of singles he had rolled up on his bedside table. Because if there were an opportunity for any extras for a fee, he would have mortgaged Molly's house. He left with cash because guaranteed that club kicked him out before the paying crowd without the camera crew showed up. Well, you know who I really wanted to see that morning after was Jesse, because God only knows what his luscious locks of love look like after a hard night of partying with a Dominican and some strippers. Well, since things haven't been smooth sailing in Luis's ability to act as a responsible parent or just a decent person, Molly, Luis, and the girls are going to go out for ice cream. And of course, Molly has picked a place that my cellulite and I would love. A homemade ice cream place that has those fun specialty flavors like cheesecake and stuff. I grew another chin just watching. They get their ice cream and they go outside to sit on these cute little rocking chairs and just enjoy one another. And Molly does the typical girl thing and says, "Oh, this thing is huge." No, not about Luis's dick or the size of my ass, but about the size of the ice cream. We all do it. Order the large of something and then be like, "Oh my gosh, waiter, you didn't tell me this was so big. How am I going to finish all this?" And then you just proceed to inhale it like Chris Farley in that classic Gap Girls skit. "Lay off me, I'm starving." So back on the rocking chairs, Molly is trying to get Luis to engage and she's asking him questions. And then Kensley drops her ice cream all over herself. Molly's trying to clean it up and she's dropping hints and insinuating for Luis to go get napkins and help. But he's not getting the hint. And I'm getting pissed off at Kensley because that cup of ice cream was easily $5.25 right down the drain. Well, Luis is not moving a muscle and he's just smiling and saying, "This is your daughter. You need to educate her." This is a tough one because, yes, kids spill stuff and make mistakes. What I always taught my students, what I still tell my kids, it's not whether or not you make a mistake, it's what you do when you make one. So when it comes down to this, what is Kensley most of the time? Is she a wild kid that needs more discipline? Or is Luis a total asshole? It's probably a mix of both. But here's the thing. Molly is still the primary caregiver. Molly should be the one doing the discipline. Molly should be the one that they go to first. Molly should be the buffer between her kids and her partner so they can all live and work together. It may suck for Molly. It may not be fair, but life is not fair, Molly, especially for your kids who didn't choose this. So basically what I'm saying is Luis should have gotten up to go get napkins. And Molly shouldn't have expected Luis to jump up and take care of Kensley on his own. Then Luis kept on insisting Kensley bash her chair into the siding of the store. Am I missing something? Is this a thing they do in the Dominican Republic? Or was he just trying to get Kensley in trouble? Like a, oh, get her on camera doing something destructive. So then he can point and be like, "Oh, see, I told you." Whatever it wasn't a sincere attempt to have fun and bond over being silly. It was just strange. This day of filming, Luis was feeling very emboldened, but I kind of agreed with him on one thing he said. He looked at Molly right in the eyes and said, "You have to decide if you want to be my wife or no." Because even watching this myself, it's really easy to keep saying, "Luis is a jerk. Luis doesn't say nice stuff about the kids." But Molly is endorsing it. Molly is deciding this is something that she's okay with And if he's saying things and doing things and she's still choosing him, well, then she's equally to blame. Well, by the time they're done eating their ice cream, Luis has already decided to peace out on family night and he's choosing to go home to sleep. He's probably still hungover, and swimming with Kensley is not an equal match for Molly's comfortable bed. And maybe we have it all wrong. Maybe he just wants to go back to the bedroom, not to sleep, but to look at the photo of his family that Molly had framed for him. Or swing himself to sleep in a hammock he's fashioned from Molly's bras. All right, Elizabeth and Andre. Interestingly enough, these two assholes were in Chicago and the suburbs this weekend. And man, did the awesome ladies in our Facebook group combine forces to try to spot them in person out in the wild. We were all so close. By the way, you guys, we need a name. Something with a Pedro ring to it, like family, I don't know, family boots, like boots on the ground, and a shout out to Nicole and her sand boots. I don't know. Let's think of something. So anyway, Andre is going to meet up with Father Elizabeth, and they're going to go hit range balls at a golf course. Besides a gun range, which these two do frequent as shown on their Instagrams, a golf course is deceivingly dangerous. Do you trust Andre with a club made of graphite, titanium, and steel, and large areas of remote spaces, sand traps, flying golf balls that, oh, oops, I didn't mean to drive that right into the back of your head. Well, when they last saw each other, Father Elizabeth had told them that they were not getting any more financial help from him. Doesn't seem like Andre is really bothered by that much, but I'm thinking it's because he just doesn't realize the extent to which Elizabeth is still being taken care of by her daddy. He's more worried about her dad respecting him and accepting him for who he is. That's it. So Father Elizabeth arrives to the links, and Andre walks out wearing the tightest of tight trouser shorts. Dear God, he was going to pull a Bethany Frankel when she met Erica Jane and she split those short skorts, whatever the hell that was, right down the ass seam. I just have to say this. I feel like Andre has like really aggressive, large poos, like gross, girthy ones, and he's unapologetic about it. Like, he's not going to spray air freshener, light a match. You have to accept him for who he is, and that's it. Oh God, I thought that was going to make me feel better getting that out of my mind and out of my mouth, but no, I'm not so sure. Sorry about that, guys. Hope you weren't eating lunch or something. All right, so back to golfing. Andre asks how to play the game, and he says, how much closer you put the ball to the hole, right? Good job, Andre. You just learned what every toddler figures out the second they even see a ball and a plastic play school club without even having to show a kid. It's like a natural instinct, like you know to put your hand to your mouth to eat. Even Elizabeth's dad says, you didn't have golf in Moldova? And then he says, we have it, but I was not interested. Damn, Andre's frankness is chilling. Well, they're lining up to hit some balls, and Father Elizabeth explains that, you know, golf is really a good time to just get to know someone, have some beers, head out in a cart for a few hours. And it's then that I realize her dad has a very intense eye contact thing. People like that make me really uncomfortable. I can't talk to them because I get all shifty and then I come off like Paul, like Bodak. I just, do you know what I'm talking about? Not necessarily close talkers, just intense eye contact. Well, clearly, Andre doesn't feel any of that or get the hint that Father Elizabeth is dropping, that he wants to get to know him, because the next thing he says is just, let's hit some balls. Okay, then. And then he just tries to smash that ball out of there. And Dave used to be a golf pro back in the day, so I always ask him how people's swings are. And when I asked him how Andre's was, he just shook his head. So that means it's bad. But Father Elizabeth, on the other hand, got a, not bad. So there's your little golf lesson for today. Well, Father Elizabeth gets to the point now, and he's done playing nice because certainly Andre isn't. And he says, you know what, Andre? My concern for you is that you need to have a good career. Elizabeth's not going to be okay with a two-bedroom apartment, driving a beat-up car while her sisters are driving Mercedes. You know what's the difference here is? Her sisters married men who had successful careers before they got married. Then Andre had enough balls shoved into those tidy tight shorts and asks, well, how old are they, 40s? Well, I have plenty of time. I'm not worried. I don't know what I would do if my daughter in the future wanted to marry a cocky motherfucker like this guy. He is unbelievable. So then Father Elizabeth moves on to the next item on his checklist that I'm sure he wanted to get to that day. And he says, you know, here in the U.S., usually men ask the father for their daughter's hand in marriage. Does that make sense? And then Andre answers, yes, we have that too. The fact is, the circumstances we were in, but yeah, I agree. And then he just keeps on swinging at those poor golf balls. Out of all options, and seeing Andre is a monster, incapable of even showing an ounce of respect, he cuts to the chase and says, you didn't ask me for her hand, so I am not helping with your expense for the wedding. You're going to have to sink or swim on your own. And then Andre just walks right out of there like Danielle Staub on The Real Housewives of New Jersey season 2 reunion. Remember that? After Teresa jumped her, just slinks off all calm and cool. Well, back at home, Libby just loves her big cuddly teddy bear 24/7, and he keeps her warm at night. Well, I'm sure he does, because his monster head takes up half the fucking bed, and that's where you lose 45% of your body heat. Then they're on a run, and Andre stops either to scope out the possible murder location and also to talk about their financial situation. He can't work until they are officially married, so he's thinking they need to move the wedding up to, within the 2 weeks. But like Evelyn, Libby has a dream. Her dream wedding is on a mountain in the snow falling, and being carried in by a white horse and carriage. First, I know she stole that from Marisol Patton from Real Housewives of Miami when she married that French guy for 13 minutes. Second, this is a blueprint for a murder/funeral party. Andre kills her on the mountain. She freezes to death. Then he may or may not eat her for sustenance, like the movie Alive, which still fucking haunts me. And then the horse and carriage is there like an old-timey Nordic hearse. And then, okay, and then third, fuck if you ever invite me to a wedding where I have to wear snow pants and freeze my ass off while I wait for you to come in your little furry bell hooded cape so you can marry your beast. No, I don't do snow pants. I live in Chicago, and I'd rather my thighs freeze into ham hocks than simultaneously sweat, freeze, and have to pee in a snowsuit. No. Well, I won't need a snowsuit anyway because I am neither invited to nor are they getting married on Murder Mountain. They are keeping it local, and Libby is heading out to go find a dress. She and her mom go in and she tries on a dress. Clearly, she's already picked it out because they skip past all that, this one or that one. and she's trying it on, and her sister and sister-in-law, who really needs low lights, you guys, come in, and they're voicing their concerns to her mom. I didn't think it was that nasty what they said, but as Brooke's heirs would say, consider the source. Okay, so yeah, she likes the dress. Next, they've saved enough money, aka they cashed in their advance from the show. They had a hefty discount for their venue, and they have enough money to throw their own wedding, and they're excited. And as they're driving there, I noticed that old beat-up car her father mentioned. Looked awfully nice to me, maybe even leather interior. Something tells me Father Elizabeth raised some spoiled little girls who grew up to be materialistic mean girls. You reap what you sow. So they arrive at the Florida doppelganger of Maddie from Sister Wives' Wedding Forest. And strangely, Andre says, I have a good feeling about this place. Dare I say he almost seems enchanted? He's almost scarier when he's in a good mood. Like his face is just wrong when he tries to smile. And then I heard him bark, where is going to be the DJ? So I'm crossing my fingers, let's all do it together, that we get some footage of him dancing, because from now on, we need to predict what kind of dancer he is. Now, this is where it gets really, really icky. They're sitting down talking about who was going to come to the wedding. And Libby says her sisters will definitely come, maybe her brothers. And then she grabs her big wooden spoon and pot to stir and says, you know, when we were dress shopping, my sisters were talking so much shit. They said they were going to take my phone and said, you're controlling. And then my sister says she's going to try and get a rise out of you to test you. So now we see right on film where all of this disgust that Andre has is coming from. Innocent old Libby is feeding him all these lines of bullshit so he will be her big, handsome protector. Us against the world, babe. So like anyone would, Andre is like, if they try to do something stupid, I don't want them here. But then Elizabeth wants to have her drama cake that she baked herself and eat it too and says, but I want them here. And then she says to us separately in the interview, I don't care. I just want everyone to get along. Well, no, you don't, because you talk shit to your family about him. And then you're talking shit about him to your family. You are preventing everyone from getting along. And then we wrap up the scene with the phrase that every abusive husband says to their wives as they groom them to isolate their families. They're going against me. They're going against you too. It's like a sweet little Moldovan love ballad. The last thing any of us want to be doing is fighting crowds looking for random gifts for the people on our list this season. Little tip from me to you. Create personalized gifts from your couch on createphotocalendars.com to create not just calendars, but mugs, photo books, shirts, you name it. Just upload photos from any device, I like to use my phone, and most items ship within 48 hours. Go to createphotocalendars.com, and if you use the promo code podcast, you can save up to 55%. You know I love a deal. Again, createphotocalendars.com, promo code podcast. All right, let's go on to Josh and Ika. Should I just record myself snoring at night? Because, Jesus, how boring are these two? I've said it before, my plate is full with Real Housewives health issues, wanting to get pregnant, IVF journeys, playing with robot babies, and vasectomy storylines. I cannot do it. So a lot of blah, blah, blah. Since Ika got here, all she's been talking about is having a baby and starting a family. And in Josh's words, Ika wants kids. That's her whole goal. Well, he tries to get her cheap red wine buzz so he can extend their timeline for having a baby to never. But Aika and her eyebrows say, 3 to 5 months, please don't make me wait a whole year. Welp, that's going to be a no. Because Josh tells us that he was fixed in his 20s after he had kids. So that's, what, 20 years ago? Which is probably when they actually did cut your balls off, like Lydia from Real Housewives of Orange County thought. So then Aika, acting like Josh should have known better, that he was going to get married and divorced 2 more times and then buy a woman from the Philippines who would want to have kids with him in his 40s while he's living with roommates. Why would you have a vasectomy? In Philippines, it's losing manhood. It's the biggest mistake in your life. I mean, she really knows how to cut a man down with her words. Maybe she should go into the vasectomy business. So Josh tries to explain that it's not that easy. It's a lot of doctors and hospital visits, and it's $15,000, which is a lot to afford. Good luck on your zero salary plus benefits, babe. Shout out to the first fan of The Office who knows which episode that's from. Well, not only that, but even with the snip snap his junk back together, there's a good chance that his old sperm, the only ones that'll survive, are going to carry his dominant traits, which isn't good. Well, Aika doesn't care about the cost or insurance not covering it because she clearly doesn't know how that stuff works here. And also, she knows that they signed a contract with the production company for TLC, and they are going to have some dollar bills coming in. Josh is not without to blame here, though. When they were in the Philippines for those whole 15 minutes they knew each other, he just told her everything she wanted to hear, that he would get a reversal, that they would have a family. He was lying by omission, like David in Thailand. Well, they agreed to set up a doctor visit because if they don't have kids, Aika is out of his life. I don't know. They're just both idiots, and I just can't get fully invested in them. Well, speaking of lying and bad investments, David and Annie. They start out with this low, serious music in the background. And we have this dramatic turn of events as David and Annie are walking into the Twisted Oak Tavern to meet up with Chris and Nikki. They're going to smooth over that explosive fight that was 2 nights ago. Well, you know, as always, I checked out this little place on Yelp. And if you're in Agora Hills, California, the owner of the Twisted Oak Tavern boasts a miso glazed salmon. Miso hungry. But bum ching. Well, David explains that we had an amazing day in Hollywood, while Annie's face is just blank. And it's as if she saw David sitting in one of those bathtubs with the doors for the old people. And he's sitting in there, flabby stomach hanging down, folded over his penis, which has retracted and has now been reabsorbed by his body. So while I'm visualizing David as sort of a Pizza the Hut from Spaceballs, but in flesh form, Annie entertains her lunchmates with dildos and rubber fish she saw. Amazing way to entertain people before you order your miso salmon. Well, David is trying to squeak by without having to admit any fault or responsibility, as always. And he simply says, oh, I was sorry at the party. And bam, Nikki calls him out on it and says, you never said you were sorry yesterday. And then David pulls a David and comes back with a, well, we were gone most of the day. But you know what? Nikki has no fucks left to give. She is not having it. And you can tell she's had some conversations with Chris because he is keeping his mouth wired shut, letting her go at it. He's like Tammy Real World Season 2. So Nikki says, Yeah, I know you're a big talker, David, but do you think you have a drinking problem? And like a little bratty kid pointing his finger at everyone else, he says, Antonia was drunk too. And man, David is staring daggers at not only Nikki, but Annie too. And it's like the bags under his eyes got saggier, and he had that same look in his eyes he did when he was drunk. Just pure sociopath finally being called out. So at this point, David's just going to go all in, do whatever he can do. And he says, I don't remember saying anything that was that bad. I said Antonio wanted to fuck Chris. I thought that was funny. Is there really any way to come back with anything when someone says something as crazy as that? That's why I think even Chris agrees at this point that David just has to go. He's not going to miss out on sleeping next to and with Nikki for the rest of his life just to save David and his reabsorbed penis. And they're even so nice as to reaffirm with Annie that even if they kick David out and he just blows it, they're still going to provide for her or at least keep a roof over her head. Well, now it's ladies' night out, which happened to be on September 24th because I may have accidentally landed on Nikki's Facebook page when I was researching something else, which I will tell you about in just a minute. Well, Nikki looks freaking hot. Annie looks good too, but I mean, is anyone gonna look good standing next to Nikki? So they're talking over sushi, and Annie confesses that she worries about David because he needs to make more money. And then Nikki just starts laying down some hard facts. And I'm wondering if this was her plan all along in taking Annie out. Like, she just needed to get some of the stuff off her chest, kind of had the safety of the crew around her to just spill her guts. I'm not going to lie. If that were me, I would want some chick to know that all of her shit came from my bank account. Hell, I make my kids know that they better treat their Target Serco leggings and t-shirts with care because mama bought that shit with her Target Red Card with 5% off and a cartwheel discount to boot. Well, Nikki says, I'm afraid David won't be able to make it without Chris. David got money from Chris for your jewelry. And Annie seems genuinely surprised because David apparently told her that he borrowed money from his dad and was paying him back. Huh. Well, shit, here we go. So as Nikki was trying to make the point that Chris does a lot for David and Annie herself, even having to co-sponsor her because David didn't have the finances to back up the K-1, Annie jumps in and finishes and says, yes, if I cannot pay for myself, Chris has to pay for me for 10 years. He just didn't want to tell you. And then Nikki's rage started building up inside, like Nicole's hunger after a workout of chasing Asin down the stairs. And she said, tonight I found out we are legally responsible for Annie for 10 years. So if they get a divorce, David won't be able to support Annie, so we are going to have to. Well, ain't that the mother effing truth? And David knows it. He knows that he'll be able to just flail away and make excuses, and they will be stuck paying for her. Fucking asshole. And that goes for Chris too, because can you even imagine your partner making a decision like that without you? And the kicker was when Annie said, I don't feel anything bad to me. I know Nikki's brother Antonio had called Annie out for being an opportunist online, and he said that Annie had stolen money from Nikki. So I'm really starting to believe that, because I cannot believe that she could just have a clear conscience. We'll jump to the next day. Nikki and Chris have called an emergency lunch with David. They know that he can't shuffle his ass out of a booth quickly enough to get away. So he's just a sitting duck while they're going to unpack all of their anger and their questions. And in case one didn't know, David was in Thailand. He's wearing a shirt to remind you, probably one that he borrowed from a street vendor, and oh, silly American man, forgot to bring his 10 baht to pay. And he orders an unsweetened iced tea with lemon, thank you, because he's a health nut now. And Nikki tells us that she is prepared to tell him that he needs to get his ass a job or he has got to go. Yes, Queen Nikki. So she kind of just gently segues in with a, I didn't know we were going to be responsible for Annie for 10 years. And then that fucking creep looks right at Chris and tries to push all the blame on him. Deflect and distract, deflect and distract. And he says, Chris, I didn't know you didn't tell her. Did you tell her what sponsorship is? Yeah, like our Queen Nikki is an idiot. She knows exactly what it means, which is why your pasty blob of gluttony is sitting in that booth right now. So she just gets right to the point and says, I don't think you should be vacationing here in California. You need to be in Kentucky getting a job. And that's when we find out Chris and Nikki are even providing them with a car and a house in Kentucky. So Nikki comes back for another round and says, why did you come to California? Then David says it was all Chris's idea. Chris wanted to show them the house and tour the city. Chris wanted me to. And that's finally when Chris put his foot down. Too gently for my liking, but he did it. And he said, don't put this all on me. So at this point, Nikki is fucking done. She wants him out like yesterday. So she asks, what's the plan? I'm not happy. I am going to be all over your ass. And God forbid Annie get pregnant. I will not be happy. You guys, please pray that his penis actually did reabsorb. Well, as Chris said, Nikki's already got your bags packed. So see you later, penguin Batman ass bitch. And as sociopaths do, David explains to Annie and us that, oh, the reason they're heading to Louisville early is so Annie can meet his family and kids before they get married. Liar, liar. Well, Annie's scared to leave Chris and Nikki and their beautiful home and free accommodations because she's already gotten used to it, quite frankly. And David wears his white t-shirt because he could probably get through security faster at the airport. No need for the x-ray machine. All he's packing are a pair of double D man boobs. And then they land, and man, I'm sorry to those of you in the great state of Kentucky, but that airport looked depressing. And Annie's expression matched it perfectly. Never thinking of sincerely asking his bride-to-be how she feels, David just carries on with, this is going to be your home. One day you'll be in this airport again. You'll say, wow, I'm home. Then they get into some camouflage SUV or Hummer or something. It's got to be a company vehicle that's been wrapped for promotion. I looked into Chris's businesses, but all I see is a lot of real estate stuff and developments. So I'm not quite sure what that was about. Well, Annie is rethinking this American life. She thought everything in America was going to be New York City. Big skyscrapers, everybody high class. Well, Annie, let's see how David, king of your village dancing down the street, lives, shall we? They pull up to an old firehouse that Chris owns. They walk in and shit, it's just a concrete cube. Much like the cell David is sure to end up in after some scam he has going or will get into is going to be found out. Well, our optimistic David says, at least if there's a fire, this place is safe. You fucking moron. You know firefighters actually fight the fire, right? They don't construct fireproof buildings. So then they go upstairs, and David's karma is having to waddle himself up and down a spiral staircase, and they check out the living space. It wasn't that bad. It looked clean. The kitchen looked nice. It had a big living area. The bed looked strangely slept in, but at least they had some furniture in there for them. And guess what? It's free. But Annie is not impressed. This might sound really bad, and I'll preface this by saying, no, I wouldn't want to live there. No, it's not what David promised. No, it's certainly not the nice LA home she just stayed in for a few weeks. But she lived in a house with no electricity or running water or doors. So is this really that terrible? Well, David's trying to be optimistic, but he tells us he's a little worried with how Annie is going to assimilate to living there because he's going to be at work all day. Ha! He strikes me as a gambler. He's going to get that TLC paycheck, probably take Annie's too, telling her he's opening her a bank account, and he will hightail it to the Horseshoe Casino and try to double his money to pay off old debt, but he's going to lose and he's going to get himself even deeper. Well, next week looks amazing because David's daughter is going to pull a classic housewife move and throw water on David. Cross your fingers it doesn't cause another t-shirt situation, because my eyes have seen enough of his moves to last me several lifetimes. So here's a little conspiracy theory digging around the internets that I found. I am merely relaying what I have read. This is all allegedly. So late last night, you know who you are, girl, and damn, you are my late night sister in stalking. I was alerted to something. It has been alleged that Fantasy Thailand, the tour group that Chris and Nikki run, same one that's been floating around in that video of David where he's called Tobo, which is short for his last name. Well, the theory is that this tour group is really a cover for some possibly allegedly underage sexual liaison. You get what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's true. It's what I read. And I also found a little subreddit that claims that some of the odd language that's used on their website is code for "we will find you young Thai girls." Now, this would make Chris being so easygoing with David make sense. David might have some major dirt on Chris that could destroy him, so Chris better make nice. I also performed the most boring of all searches for where that firehouse was and why Chris would own it. Well, come to find out, Chris Thyneman and his real estate company own something like 40 or 60% of the land along the Dixie Highway in Kentucky. So I'm guessing that old firehouse just happens to be on his land, probably rents it out for cheap. Who knows? David's still a lazy piece of shit. Well, another piece of lazy shit, and probably more compatible with David, is Nicole. Nicole and Azin. Another somber morning in Morocco as Azin is counting how many more bottles of dead goat heads on the wall until Nicole leaves. But just earlier, Nicole needed to do the thing she is worst at. More talking. She really, truly needs to seek out a psychologist and a psychiatrist for this constant need to be talking. What kind of childhood trauma or mental, emotional condition results in this? Well, I consulted my BFF in times like these, the DSM-5, and looky here. I'd say this description of histrionic personality disorder sums up Nicole pretty well. I'm not a doctor, but it's concerning as a viewer to see these behaviors and not wish her to get some professional help, not only for herself, but her daughter. So here's what I read, judge for yourself. Individuals with histrionic personality disorder exhibit excessive emotionality, a tendency to regard things in an emotional manner, and are attention seekers. Ding, ding. People with this disorder are uncomfortable or feel underappreciated when they are not the center of attention. They also, however, embarrass friends and acquaintances with excessive public displays of emotion, such as embracing casual acquaintances with passion, sobbing uncontrollably over minor setbacks, or having temper tantrums. Shall thee count thy ways? Well, per usual, Nicole accuses Azin of wanting to talk to his friends instead of her. And they begin fighting again in Azin's aunt's house. He admits that he can't get over her cheating on him, and I can't get over that she's finding multiple guys that are down with a powdered donut finish. I don't know what exactly I mean by that, but it just sounds right. He keeps asking himself why he's staying with her. Same Z's as in, and usually that's a sign that you shouldn't be with that person. Well, Azin's also decked out in a deep maroon tweed sweatsuit from Ann Taylor Loft, and she, in an oversized, I can't actually remember, but I'm just going to assume it was a tie-dye Hanes men's tee and her workout jeans. And they're sitting on the street. And Nicole says, I really need to talk to you. It's close to me leaving and I don't want to leave on bad terms. And Azin has finally figured out the rhythm and cycle of the arguments. And he says, I feel like if we talk, it'll just be bigger and more of the same. Yes. Ding, ding, ding. Good job, Azin. Listen to him, Nicole. He is exactly right. But she fucks it all up with her chicken or the egg comparison and says, no, it's this way because you aren't talking to me. Well, then he points out on top of that, it's the physical stuff like pushing and disrespecting his family and his aunt's home and embarrassing everyone with her loud temper tantrums. When Nicole promises to work on herself, we're assuming that she's talking about working out, eating right, and she's going to work on her short fuse when she gets home. If you can't do it for 2 months in Morocco, you're not doing it for a year in Orlando or wherever the hell you are. I think out of just pure exhaustion and no more fight to give, Azin just pats her back, as, you know, true soulmates do, and says, I'm sure things will be fine. We will work on it. And he awkwardly grabs her hand, in his mind just carving tally marks into the concrete confines of his soul until she leaves. Later, we find out Nicole admitting that the Wi-Fi in Morocco is not too great. Well, good thing that explanation wasn't good enough for you when you made Azin quit his job that supports his mom and family, Nicole. She bends the truth around to make it sound like Azin isn't capable of handling May and he isn't prepared to be a stepdad. Nicole tells her mom that May's a little wild and she misses home, and although Azin's okay with her during the day, he just can't deal with her crying and yelling at night. You know who else can't handle it? Me. I want to be her super nanny, JoJo Jody, and get that little darling on a schedule. She's wild during the day, Nicole, because you have her cooped up in that little apartment. She's not a doll or an accessory. She doesn't want to just lay around all day talking to you. And there is zero reason she should be waking up at night as a three-year-old because she's hungry and wants to play or whatever. That is a parenting issue. She seems like a sweet little thing who just needs a predictable routine and clear expectations. But the other little old thing Azin can't deal with is Nicole cheating on him. I can't blame him. If I were him, I'd be questioning myself. If even Nicole thought she could do better than me, then what am I missing? Her mom questions her if she can really live like this her whole life, because Azin's doubt is never going to go away. She says she thinks she can because Azin thinks it's going to be better in the U.S. I didn't really remember him saying that, but maybe he did just to get her out of the doorway one time. And we leave Azin in a sweet little scene with his aunt. She seems like a lovely woman who has surely dealt with more than her fair share with Nicole and May disrupting her peaceful home the last 2 months. And she gives Azin some good advice about needing to argue less and adapting to one another's cultures. And Azen finally articulates what exactly it is. And he says, Nicole won't learn what to do or how to act. She just does it when I tell her to. And I think he really knocked it out of the park, because Nicole lacks that spark under her ass, that go-get-em-ness, that inner desire to just make something happen. And that really does make someone so unattractive. A lazy person with no passion. It's not cute. It's not charming. And unfortunately, I just don't think it's something that a person can change. Nicole will be perfectly happy at a low-paying, part-time job the rest of her life because she just doesn't desire anything more. She doesn't want to work hard for anything. They're not compatible, but even so, Azen's aunt wishes him well and says that if he does decide to go, God willing, everything's going to work out. And like a mic drop, Azen looks straight into the camera that's across a courtyard and says, I hope so. Dun, dun, dun. Well, I have a little advice for these two I'd like to add. It may just become your song, Azen and Nicole. I can see it as a duet in a karaoke bar. May I suggest the Eurythmics, Here Comes the Rain Again. Close your eyes and enjoy the duo.
Take it away, Azen.
Well, how do I come back after that one? Oh, I know, Evelyn and David. I think Evelyn is even more fun to hate watch than Nicole. I never thought I'd say that. She brings it every time, and this time, we even got a Bill Cosby sweater. I'm not even going to make a joke there because too soon. Well, we have 43 days until David's ears will be bleeding like ours are, listening to Evelyn strumming her guitar, and in walks Jacqueline with a laundry basket. And we're treated to a reenactment of an after-school special I saw in the 80s, except that one ended with a dollhouse and a girl admitting that her uncle or neighbor made her scratch his back, and I learned about good touch and bad touch. Well, Jacqueline asks if Evelyn wants to help her fold laundry, and I thought I heard Evelyn say, I don't think you need me to. Fuck off, Evelyn. Fun fact, she and her mom have matching wavy mullets. But that meant nothing to me because my eyes were drawn to the photo above her bed. You guys, I confirmed this with some Facebook searching. That photo is of her and hot Jesus. Anyone else have a picture of themselves and their sexy daddy above them at night? This is all getting a little too Kendra Caldwell hyphen Duggar and her butterfly kisses daddy. As the musician and band manager fold dresses, Evelyn admits she's a little nervous about the things that go along with marriage. You know, what happens after you tuck your Bible away for the night? It's as if Jacqueline has been waiting her whole life to rub it into Evelyn's face that she gets to bang hot Jesus on the reg. She's there to be a sounding board for all of Evelyn's questions and concerns. She's almost a little too eager. Now, I never ever had the talk with my mom, and I went to a Catholic school, so maybe I'm just a little tight-lipped about certain things between kids and their parents. But is Jacqueline really thinking Evelyn's going to be coming to her for tips and tricks? So world traveler and Apple expert Evelyn asks, how do you get to be comfortable with someone? Like, being together naked seems like, which makes me convinced, without a doubt, that these two have never made out. I bet they've kissed, maybe some tongue, not even convinced of that. But I bet they're doing a Duggar light thing, staying sweet until marriage. And Evelyn's not even sure she's going to like sex as much as a family band jam sesh. But Jacqueline reassures her that penises are designed for vaginas. It's something to look forward to. It's a beautiful thing. Well, now I don't even ever want to have sex again after hearing that. Thanks, Jacqueline. I think the only way she's going to make it up to me is lending me hot Jesus for a night. I mean, it's the only right thing to do. WW hot Jesus do. This is when we find out David has forbidden Evelyn from discussing sex with him or anyone else. And I'm sure he lost a fucking gasket seeing how Evelyn was practically spread eagle on her bed while talking to her mom. Like she's inviting her vagina into the conversation. How rude not to include the guest of honor. If I had as much power as David had to forbid things, I would have demanded Evelyn take down all those mirror flowers on the wall, tone down the Dayglow yellow paint, and for God's sake, get your nasty ass shoes off your bed. Well, since this talk didn't quite do it for Evelyn, she calls up Michaela, who has reconciled with David so she can shower her with unnecessary attention and lend her a hand at the most dowdy lingerie store on earth. If you want to check out this lingerie store, I found this little gem of a small business called Joy All Under Things. You heard that right. And you know how I knew I found the right place? Because I spotted a very unique stained glass window in the background of a huge bra. Oh my God. I mean, and she's trying to convince David to stay in Claremont. What the fuck? All right. Well, just in case you were wondering, Joy All Under Things is having a sale right now. Pajama sets that were $150 are now marked down to only $138. Call me crazy, but I'd never spend more than $19.97 at Target for pajamas. $138 pajamas better come with a pair of slippers, wine, and an Amazon gift card for $138. Well, this is not only going to be a fun day for Evelyn, but it's also going to be a fun day for Michaela because she gets to hang out with Evelyn, who's going to have sex soon, in case you didn't catch it the first 20 minutes of her talking about it. Evelyn thinks it's going to be a little weird and exciting for Michaela to take little innocent her to a lingerie store. No, what's going to be weird is her undressing you in the changing room together. What the fuck was that? No one has seen my naked ass except for my husband and the nurses in the delivery room. I cannot be responsible for what my friends can never unsee. Well, little innocent Evelyn is ready to get down because she's picking out more racy stuff than expected. Michaela is very Velma from Scooby-Doo, which is not a diss because I like Michaela. And Velma was a smart one, and I enjoyed her little bob and her socks much more than I enjoyed that slut Daphne. When they were in the dressing room, I'm not quite sure Evelyn was doing it right because Michaela was instructing her head first, then neck, arms in. Was she trying to help her shimmy out of her turtleneck, or were they putting the thong on over her head? Well, as Evelyn saunters her way to the sitting room, you can tell she is feeling her damn self. She's confident in herself when she's performing because she reveals her soul. But Michaela, when she's going to have sex, she's going to have to reveal everything. Settle down, Evelyn. He's going to see your boobs. Maybe, because I have a feeling it's going to be lights out and she's going to be slinking around in that ugly burgundy thing every chance she gets. Well, now it's time to spend some time with her beloved So Evelyn's heading on over to David's pastor's basement apartment to make dinner because she's going to be a little Stepford wife. And she even found an old dress in that house they were touring last week. She washed off the hoarded house and cat pee smell, had Mommy Jacqueline sew on a few buttons while she cooked an egg for breakfast, and now she looks like the petri dish for a bladder infection. She's prepared to make an incredible meal for David that they both enjoyed when they ate together at a Taco Bell back in Spain. It's cheese quesadillas. I mean, have you ever tried a Claremont quesadilla? She puts on an actual apron to make this elaborate, time-intensive meal that I've been making for myself since fourth grade as a latchkey kid. I'm a little concerned about David's sodium intake as he keeps insisting that she salt everything. And on top of these yummy quesadillas, Evelyn is even going to saute an onion on the side. Yeah, I'd be heading for that apple orchard for dinner next time. Well, David makes his way around to breathe over Evelyn's shoulder and bark orders in order to maintain his control. And she lovingly asks, "Are you going to get off me so I can cook?" And this is the falling in love stage. Well, after all that slaving over the pan for 1 minute each side, Evelyn carefully steers the conversation to their future sex life as husband and wife. Holy shit. David is clenching his jaw and he starts out quietly speaking and then he gets louder and louder. "In my family, we don't talk about intimacy and stuff, so we can talk about it after we are married. I will talk to your pastor about it. I'm going to take a break. Do you need me to be more clear about it?" What the fuck, man? I've always had a little distant gaydar pinging, but I hear it getting louder. This is beyond shyness. Again, I never talked about sex growing up. We still don't. I went to Catholic school. I'm used to these conservative feelings about stuff like that, but this is beyond. Then I think David realizes that he's just stuck in the hallway now because he, you know, powdered his way out of there. And he comes back in and sits down on the couch. And he says, "I don't know what to do. Can't you just let me take a break? I can't believe you. I was raised in a conservative way. You said you understood." So the night didn't end well, and Evelyn's wiping away tears. This is just a disaster pairing. I think David has control issues because there are things in his personal life which maybe he's trying to pray away that he cannot control. So he takes his frustration and impatience out on other people. I do believe he is a virgin, but maybe not for religious reasons. Either way, I'm thinking Evelyn will be needing to get that address for the shop Annie and David stopped in, or else she is going to be yodeling some really tragic love ballads. We did it. We made it to the end of the show. Check out the bonus episode on Patreon. This week, I'm going to finish up the saga, wink, wink, you know what I'm talking about, and some other stuff. Tomorrow night is the premiere of Stripped on Bravo, and I'm going to watch and review that this week, as well as Unexpected and Teen Mom OG. And another one, actually, you know what? I'm going to hold off. I'll tell you about it tomorrow because I'm going to try to squeeze in another episode this week if I can. So thank you for listening. If you get a chance, please rate and leave a written review on iTunes. I'll serenade you with an Evelyn original if you do. Talk to you tomorrow. Stay sweet, stay salty.